from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, some 5% of Americans are looking for love outside their relationships with their partner's permission, according to Scientific American. This practice of consensual non-monogamy is known as polyamory, and the Bay Area is home to one of the largest polyamory communities in the nation. So, how have people managed to open up their relationships to multiple partners without destroying them? On this day before Valentine's Day, let's explore polyamory. Next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Got Valentine's Day plans with that special someone tomorrow? Or perhaps with two, three, or four special people? By all accounts, the Bay Area's polyamory community is sizable and thriving, with everything from couples who occasionally see other people to several people all living together in a group relationship. But putting non-monogamous, consensual relationships into practice isn't easy. In this hour of Forum, we talk to a panel of polyamorists about the benefits, the downsides, and the compromises that come with love and sex with multiple partners, and what they think monogamists could learn from their experience. Joining us are Marcia Barchinski. She's an open relationship coach and author of the ebook on becoming non-monogamous titled Four Mistakes Couples Make When Opening Up and How to Avoid Them. Hi, Marcia Barchinski.
Hi.
And we're also joined by William Winters. He's a non-monogamous community organizer who's been in an open relationship for 8 years. Welcome, William Winters.
Thanks for having me, Mina.
And Polly Superstar Whitaker, author of the memoir Polly, Sex Culture Revolutionary. She's founder of the San Francisco Sex Positive Communities Mission Control and Kinky Salon. Welcome, Polly Superstar Whitaker.
Hi there.
You know what, William Winters, I want to start with you. I want you to share with us what kind of polyamorous relationship are you in?
A long one, first off. My partner and I are in a somewhat hierarchical polyamorous relationship. So I think of Anna as my primary partner. And we both see other people pretty freely.
So the two of you are married, right?
We are married, yeah.
So why don't you consider your relationship outside of your marriage infidelity?
Well, first off, I suppose because we both not only think it's okay, but we actually celebrate our other, like each other's other relationships and actually, you know, integrate, you know, our other partners into our lives. So, you know,
how do you integrate your other partners into your lives?
Well, we just we're all friends, you know, like we all hang out together. We go to each other's places for the holidays. I know, you know, Anna's partner's children and, you know, buy them Christmas presents. And, you know, it is a very familial sort of set of relationships. And so, you know, I think of Anna's other partners as like my close friends and dear community and an essential part of my, you know, sort of social support system. And I think that that is, you know, somewhat true of, you know, at least somewhat true, rather, of Anna's relationship with my partners.
And you've described your relationship as deeply gratifying for both of you. What would you say are its rewards?
Well, I think it's what I was describing to a certain extent. It was, it's the way that we can just get so much love, so much support, so much closeness, so much intimacy from a really wide range of people. You know, we don't think that more is less. We think that more is more. You know, there are limits, certainly, I think, in terms of, like, time and attention. But, I mean, so far, we have just such a rich life with an amazing community. And, yeah, it's hard for me to imagine our lives as anything other than enriched by our decision to open up our relationship.
And Poly Superstar Whitaker, there are many configurations, right, of polyamorous relationships. Can you walk us through some of those?
Yeah, I mean, there are many configurations of monogamous relationships, too. I think that it's not that polyamory is one thing and monogamy is another thing. It's that there's a whole range of relationships within those that meet somewhere in the middle where it can be kind of fuzzy as to whether you're being polyamorous or monogamous. Like, for example, if you're in a monogamous relationship where you're open to maybe making out with other people, or where you're open to having cuddle dates with other people, like, where does the monogamy end and the polyamory begin? At what point do you start saying that you are polyamorous and not monogamous? There's a lot of different kinds of relationships. At the full end of the polyamory spectrum, there's relationship anarchy, which is that you approach each relationship with a completely new eyes, and that you don't assign any kind of pre-organized set of rules to it, and you just approach it, each relationship, completely uniquely, and there's no rules to anything. And so that's kind of one extreme end of polyamory. And then there's also things like polyfidelity, where, you know, there's a committed triad or foursome or family who are not actually dating and going in other relationships, but they're committed in the way a monogamous relationship is, but to a larger group of people. So, and there's also swinging, where you just go and like have sex at parties. I mean, there's so many different options available. And I think that's what's happening right now in our culture, is just our eyes are being opened to the options that are available to us.
But just to enable me to get sort of a concrete sense, you mentioned words like triads and quads. What does that mean? Can you just explain what those are, those specific configurations?
Well, a triad would be three people and a quad would be four people. A family would be more, a polyamorous family would be something like what William has, where there are multiple people and everybody is, you know, interacting with each other. And
but when you say triad, would the three people be having relationships with each other?
It depends on the triad. I mean, there's as many different kinds of polyamory as there are relationships. And the difference is not that polyamory is different. Monogamy is the same in this context, which is you create your relationship according to the way that you want to live your life. And you don't just make assumptions about the way the relationship is going to be.
I'd like to go now to Pepper Mint. He's been in a polyamorous relationship for 12 years and lives in Berkeley. Hi, Pepper Mint. Are you there?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, one of the things that I learned about your relationship is that you actually have a child with one of your partners. Can you tell me a little bit about your polyamorous arrangements and how you manage them?
Yeah, I have a 2-month-old with my partner, Jen.
Congratulations.
In addition, I have 4 or 5 other girlfriends, depending on how you count. I end up seeing them not as often as you might think for, like, a monogamous relationship, for example. And that's really how I handle having that many people in my life. In addition, I've been organizing poly events and sort of doing a bit of education here and there.
And your girlfriends, they are also, and the person that you have the child with, also have other partners as well, right?
Yeah, they're all dating other men and, in some cases, women or genderqueer people.
And, you know, similar question that I had asked William Winters, what is it about polyamory that makes it right for you?
You know, I tried monogamy for a couple of years, and it just really wasn't my thing. I guess I just have a lot of love, and I think there's a certain, like, for me, there's a certain thing in the freedom where sometimes it's not even about dating, right? Like, if I'm out at a party and someone flirts with me, I can flirt with them back without really feeling guilty or weird about it. And I think that's very important to me.
And your arrangement, how has the baby changed any of the dynamics for you, if at all?
You know, mostly there's a lot of time spent caring for the baby. And so, you know, I used to sort of schedule with an iron fist, and now I schedule with an even more iron fist, as it were. And there's been that my dating style has sort of switched from, hey, let's go out to dinner and take in a movie and then go back to your place for a nice long evening. And it's more like, come over and hang out with me and the baby for a couple hours and we'll sit downstairs for like half an hour. Yeah.
When you say schedule with an iron fist, what did you mean by that? What is scheduling like with five girlfriends?
Well, I think we like to say that scheduling is one of the major polyamorous skills. It's really important to find ways to make time for all the people in your life and to also really do so in a way that's respectful of everyone involved. And that's really a skill. We all have, like, Google Calendars, right? You know, we all sort of learn this skill.
And so you arrange accordingly and to try to make sure that time is being spent equally among folks.
Not necessarily equally, but that
quality.
The time with each person is what it needs to be.
I see. Does jealousy ever come into play, Peppermint?
You know, jealousy actually tends to be a huge issue for poly people. I think in many ways we inherit that from sort of the monogamous world. But some of us don't get jealous. I'm one of those. Due to my home life when I was a child, I didn't really pick up jealousy.
Because you grew up in a home with polyamory parents.
They were not polyamorous, but they had an open relationship.
Oh, I see. What's the difference?
You know, it was about the same as growing up in any other family. It really wasn't that different. It's just, you know, other parents have friends. My parents had friends that they would occasionally do things with.
I see. Marcia, so there do seem to be, what is the difference often between, you know, polyamory tends to get conflated with different things. What do you see as the difference between polyamory and open relationships?
So there's a bit of an overlap between them, which is why I think people get them confused. Open relationships sort of encompass the broad range of ethical non-monogamy. So anything from swinging to occasionally hooking up with somebody else to like what Polly was saying about, you know, having the freedom to flirt or, you know, that could all fall under the umbrella of open relationships. And there's a lot of different ways to do open relationships. Polyamory is also fairly broad. There's a lot of different ways to do it. And the way I define it is that the difference between open relationships broadly and polyamory a little bit more narrowly is that polyamory is more focused on love romantic relationships that have a sexual component as well. So that's where you start to get people talking in terms of, oh, we're like a family. And that may be like we're like a nuclear family. We all live together. Or it might be like my configuration is much more like an extended family where you can make metaphors to in-laws and cousins and that kind of metaphorical sort of connection.
And while we're on the topic, polyamory is often conflated with polygamy as well. Mm-hmm. Do you want to draw that distinction?
Yeah, the polyamory community is, first of all, it's generally not religiously based, and polygamy is often very religiously based. And in polyamory, women have as many rights, and some would argue more rights than men do. And in polygamy, it's usually a very hierarchical, male-dominated, I would say sexist situation, whereas polyamory there's a lot more cultural context for women's sexual autonomy and women's ability to make choices in their romantic lives outside of the control of a male figure.
And we heard Peppermint say that jealousy does come up as an issue. What are the biggest threats? As a relationship coach, what are the biggest threats to a polyamorous relationship? And is jealousy one of them?
Jealousy is certainly one of them. And I would say that the biggest threats are the same threats as a monogamous relationship. Somebody's not paying attention. Somebody's, you know, taking people for granted, poor communication, not communicating around important things like money and housing. Like those are the same issues. The things that tend to come up in addition to that in a poly context is lack of clarity about, well, what are we doing? Like, are we trying to be polyamorous? If we are trying to be poly, what is our vision for that? Or, you know, some people use the word poly as a stand-in for all kinds of open relationships. So I think it's really important when people are coming from a monogamous context, whether they're single or already in a relationship, to really spend time doing some homework on, well, what am I actually talking about? Like when I'm saying this word and I'm picturing something in my head, what is it that you're picturing? Because the word polyamory doesn't necessarily communicate all the things around boundaries and needs that might be there.
It sounds like it requires a lot of communication.
Yes. Definitely.
You're nodding your heads, Polly, Superstar Whitaker, and William.
Yeah, well, I think every relationship needs a lot of communication. And I think that in the past, there's a lot of people have made a lot of assumptions about relationships based on external factors like movies and songs and things that you're supposed to expect from your partner. And they don't really have the communication to make that happen. And I don't think it's just a polyamory thing. I think it's a conscious relationship thing, whether you're monogamous or polyamorous. You can do it badly or well either way. You know, and I think, you know, relationships in general require a lot of communication.
William Winters, you were profiled in San Francisco Magazine, and I was struck by one of the things that you had mentioned, which is that jealousy doesn't tend to come up for you and Anna. And I was wondering, how do you feel when, you know, Anna takes on another partner? Or, yeah, how do you manage that?
I mean, there's typically not very much management involved from my point of view, in part because, you know, I'm really busy. I have a very full life. We both have full-time jobs and hobbies and friends and, you know, other lovers. And so, you know, when Anna takes on another lover, or another partner, it doesn't bother me in part because, like, my life is so full, you know, and a lot of that fullness includes my relationship with her. Like, we spend a lot of time together, given how much time we spend with other people. we used to have an agreement in our relationship when we first opened things up and we were a little bit, like, less, you know, sure about our path, that, you know, anytime we dated someone new, and it seemed like it was going towards an ongoing thing, then we would get together with the other person and have, you know, coffee or dinner or something like that. And now it's just like, who has the time? not that Anna actually does a ton of dating. I think I probably actually have more new, you know, sort of ongoing partners than Anna does. But I think that the reverse is also true. You know, so in part, it's like, who has time for jealousy? And in part, you know, I think that, you know, what Polly was saying earlier about this phenomenon that I like to call the sort of hegemony of monogamy, that tells us, you know, like, through our culture, that's like always modeling through television, through songs, through movies, you know, like, how we should react emotionally to certain things. Like, I think that jealousy is actually, like, one of those phenomena. You know, like our culture tells us all the time that, like, if our partner cheats on us or if our partner shares intimacy with someone new, then, you know, we should react in a particular kind of way. And I think that once you get outside of that, once you see that there are, like, other options available to you for how you react to things, then, you know, it becomes, so much opens up.
You know, that reminds me, when I was doing research for this, one of the articles that I read said that a polyamorous person, when a partner has sex or falls in love with someone else, that they're likely to tell you that they're thrilled for that person. Do you hear that, Marsha Baczynski?
I do, but I wanna put a little asterisk next
sure.
to that, because I don't think there are polyamorous people that feel things. I think people feel things, and many people who have been in the poly world for a long time have kind of gotten to the point with their partners where, you know, like with the people you've been with for a long time, and you kind of know how they operate, you know why they're making decisions, and you trust that they're making good choices for themselves, why wouldn't you be happy for it? You know, and I think this is where, when people are new, and this is what I see a lot in my practice, is that when people are new to it, you're charting like brand new territory. So I wouldn't necessarily know how a partner is going to react when they fall in love with somebody else. So when I'm first starting out, it's like, oh my God, this is the scariest thing ever, because we have all of those pre-existing cultural tropes about, you know, we're supposed to be in competition and there's only so much time and there's only so much love and all of those beliefs. But once you've been doing it for 5, 6, 7, 10, in my case, 16 years, you're just like, oh, I can see how you're making decisions. I trust that. Oh, you fell in love? I'm excited for you. But I don't think that means that polyamory, that's not like a polyamorous thing. Like, people have those feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that jealousy happens as well you know, whether you're monogamous or polyamorous, jealousy is something that happens because you're not feeling safe,
right.
Because you think that something that you care about is going to be taken away from you. And when you're in a new relationship and your new partner has a new work person with them who is really attractive and who you're concerned about how much time they spend together. I mean, these kinds of things that come up for monogamous people seem ridiculous. Once you've been together for a few years, you'd be like, oh, that's my partner. I totally trust them. It's the same thing with polyamorous people. We're just experiencing the jealousy and then the safety and the trust around sexuality as well as all the other areas of life.
So can I ask the panel, feel free to jump in, just on some specific practical considerations. So, for example, if you have multiple partners, how do you deal with concerns around sexually transmitted infections? Marsha Baczynski.
Sure, I'll jump in on that. So I do spend a lot of time with my clients talking about this. My lovers and I spend time talking about this. It's fairly common practice in the poly world, especially for people who are actively dating, because I also want to emphasize that being polyamorous doesn't necessarily mean you're actively dating. You might just have a couple of relationships and it's a closed thing. So if it's a closed situation, it's the same as a monogamous closed situation. As long as everybody's staying true to their commitments, then you've all been tested and you've gotten that all cleared out. Then you know what's up and you can just go with it. But as far as people who are dating, what I have found is people in the polyamory world are much, much more comfortable talking about everything having to do with safer sex. So people talk about their testing status. They're willing to talk about what have you done since your last test. They're willing to talk about who their other partners are and what kinds of activities their partners get up to. I also find that people are a lot more creative about the kinds of sex they have in order to stay safe. So things like having sex with your hands or using toys is much more common, I think, in the polyamory world. I think there's a lot more comfort with could kind of use the middle school system, like going just to second base, you know, making out, cuddling, having like naked time that's not necessarily a risky behavior. I think all of those things are much more common. And I think that, you know, people are obviously very used to using condoms and other forms of protection. So all of those things add up to, from what I can tell and from the limited amount of research that's been done, the poly community is generally even safer than a lot of serial monogamists, because in serial monogamy, there's more assumptions and less explicit conversation about what's actually happening. And that explicit conversation in and of itself doesn't keep you safe, but the capacity to make choices does.
And we're talking about polyamory with Marsha Baczynski, an open relationship coach and author of Four Mistakes Couples Make When Opening Up and How to Avoid Them. Poly Superstar Whitaker, she's the author of the memoir Poly, Sex Culture Revolutionary, and founder of the San Francisco Sex Positive Community's Mission Control and Kinky Salon. We're also talking with Pepper Mint, who has been in a polyamorous relationship for 12 years, and William Winters, a non-monogamous community organizer who's been in an open relationship for 8 years. Have you tried polyamory? Does it sound appealing to you? Do you prefer to stick with monogamy? Why? We want to hear from you. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions to forum@kqed.org. I'm Mina Kim. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're discussing polyamory with my guests, William Winters, a polyamory community organizer, Marsha Baczynski, an open relationship coach and author, Poly Superstar Whitaker, author of the memoir Poly Sex Culture Revolutionary and founder of the San Francisco Sex Positive Community's Mission Control and Kinky Salon. And we're also talking with Pepper Mint, who's been in a polyamorous relationship for 12 years. Let's see what our listeners have to say. Let's go to Jessica in Sebastopol. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Feel free to go ahead.
Oh, great. I just wanted to call primarily to thank the panelists for coming on and treating polyamory as not only like legitimate, but talking about the many facets and faces of those relationships. It's really lovely to hear. I really appreciate it, you guys.
Well, Jessica, thanks so much for the call. You know, she raised an interesting point about legitimacy. I mean, do folks in the polyamory world ever feel discriminated against?
Ha!
Poly yes. Superstar Whitaker, go ahead.
Well, I mean, there are many people who can't be out and open about their lifestyle that would be fired from their jobs, that would have their children taken away from them. The culture that we're living in now does not support these lifestyles. It sees them as immoral. And there are many places where judges would absolutely take away kids and see being fired from a job as being the right thing to do. And so, yeah, it's not just a personal thing where we're like, hey, we feel marginalized. It's actually like really affecting people's lives.
Peppermint, you have a 2-month-old. Do you feel more concerned about being open with your polyamorous, you know, relationship?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I know another poly person in the community who, you know, someone called Child Protective Services on them in a sort of very bogus way, and their kid was taken away for 2 weeks until they could figure it all out. And I think it's something that actually all parents in the poly community are very concerned about. You find a lot of parents who start really closeting once they have children. You know, and I feel like it's not so much of a problem here in the Bay Area, and I personally happen to have a lot of resources, so I'm not too worried about it. But if I was not here or I did not have the resources I had, like, it would be a huge concern. And it's, you know, sometimes it's strangers who are just upset at the person. Sometimes it's, you know, grandparents who are disapproving who then try to take the kids away. Right. Those actually custody cases are a huge deal.
Hmm. William Winters, I see you nodding. Have you felt social costs from being part of the polyamory world?
Well, I just wanted to kind of piggyback on Pepper's point for a second and say that, you know, like, certainly the legal challenges are very real, but then there's also the fear of, like, social disapprobation. So what does it mean, for instance, if, you know, you are a poly family with a school-age child and, you know, like, disapproving parents at the school, you know that you're polyamorous, then can your child ever have friends over to play? You know, like those are real social consequences that make it much harder for people to be out about being poly or non-monogamous or just sort of like non-heteronormative in general.
Patrick writes, there's a popular misconception that jealousy is an insurmountable barrier to non-monogamy and that jealousy is a natural, inevitable emotion. I would suggest a different perspective. We're deeply social animals, feeling valued, loved, needed, and recognized by others in our relationships, communities, at work, and all other kind of social settings is really fundamental. When we fear that we might not be valued, loved, needed, and recognized, we become afraid, angry, resentful. In our romantic relationship, we call that reaction jealousy, but it's really just a personal fear and insecurity. Security about whether we are enough for our partner. People in non-monogamous relationships work on this by building enough trust and having enough communication so that they don't feel that insecurity. It's simply something we all have to work on, and non-monogamous folks are simply having the opportunity to get better and better at it. I see a lot of nods. Another listener writes, does this mean another change in marriage definition? Is this a question you've been asked before? I see some smiles.
Yeah, I think there's a lot happening right now, obviously with the gay community, getting the rights to vote, that's becoming more and more of a mainstream issue that's kind of culturally acceptable. And a lot of people are asking, like, what's next? What's the next question down the line? Will multiple marriages become something that is a mainstream issue?
And do you see that happening, Marcia Baczynski?
I don't know how that's going to go. I don't think it's very likely to get the critical mass anytime soon. I think that as far as a redefinition of marriage, I always kind of smirk when people say that, because I feel like this is really just a continuation of the redefinition of marriage that started about 150, 200 years ago, when it became less of an economic arrangement and more of a love arrangement. I mean, the Victorians were the ones who redefined marriage. We're just continuing the process.
And let's go to more of your calls. Let's go to Philip in Oakland. Hi, Philip.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
I just wanted to say that perhaps I should preempt what I'm about to share with the fact that I am 64 years old and I came up in Oakland, California, and some of my perceptions may be distorted by the wounded warrior. I called it, we had a domestic war as black people. When Martin Luther King died, we decided we were going to go crazy. Screw white folks and their rules and their regulations and their perceptions. And one of those perceptions was white puritanical ethics do not apply to me. I have since then, in my efforts to become a upstanding citizen of the community and a good Christian, seeing where my children, seven children by seven different women, are in some ways scarred, in some ways unable to assimilate into society. There's a lot of things. There is a lot of baggage. I don't want to get too far off, but I need, sometimes people understand you better when they know where you come from. There's a lot of baggage you carry when you spread yourself around. If you have children as a result of having lived polyamorously. And I have children, and I think all of them have some scars because of that. And then some of it, you know, either because of my presence or my absence, because not only was I polyamorous, but I was a bad dad. I was irresponsible, according to puritanical ethics and traditional norms all the way across the board. So there are other things that perhaps influence them to not assimilate so well. But I don't know today if I'll ever, and I'm 64, and even at 64, there are some things that are visible. At least for me, I want to rub up against somebody. I want to have a mate, but I don't want to use people. I don't know that I'll ever be able to generate the kind of love and affection that society and people say they most women deserve and desire.
Well, Philip, thanks so much for your candidness. I appreciate it. And for sharing your story. One of the things, though, that there are a couple things that stands out to me about what Philip was saying. One is that he touches on some of the downsides of polyamory. Do you want to share a little bit about that, Marcia Baczynski?
Oh, well, I mean, it's really time consuming to do it in a way that has people feel taken care of. I think there's a real cost in terms of other things you could be doing with your life, which for some people is fine. I mean, it's sort of like taking up a really intense rock climbing habit. You know, for people who are really into it, they really, really enjoy it. For everybody outside, they think you're crazy, and that's a lot of work. So there's that. I think that also people coming into it when they don't have very good relationship skills to begin with can really cause a lot of harm and damage to their partners. And that can be potentially really toxic. I certainly don't think that this is the way people should live their lives or, you know, it's any kind of absolutes around that. I think that people really need to step into this kind of a type of relationship really mindfully and really with some intentionality in order to avoid causing some of those harms.
The other thing that Philip's call made me think about was just that he's 64 years old. He says he's been in polyamorous relationships all his life. How far back would you say the roots of this are? You know what I mean? There are different types of arrangements that have been there, but one with the sort of flavor of polyamory that we're seeing now, when do you think it started?
So this is
William Winters?
I mean, what I know is that there were a number of free love movements in the 19th century, like in 19th century America. And, you know, Victoria Woodhull was a really prominent sort of proto-feminist suffragette business owner activist who, you know, who wanted to have access to the free love that the men of her era were suddenly demanding. And so I think that the roots of the modern practice of polyamory, specifically polyamory and not necessarily swinging, I think that history can be traced back to like Air Force bases in the 1940s and 50s. But specifically, polyamory can be traced back to like Victoria Woodhull and the free love movements.
It's been interesting. I've read that polyamory be described as pro-woman or feminist in part because the first books on the movement were written by women and that a lot of polyamorous households actually may have more men than women. Let's go to Skye in San Francisco. Hi, Skye.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to comment, and you're actually leading up to it, in that I am a gay man, and I'm in a relationship with three other gay men here in San Francisco. We don't live together, and two of my partners actually have husbands themselves. I actually got to be one of the witnesses for one of their weddings very recently. And I wanted to just ask the panel if they had any really good recommendations on books or movies or articles pertaining to polyamory that other curious seekers of polyamory may want to check out to be informed and to be... to learn more about polyamory in general. And I'll take my comment off the air.
Thanks, Sky.
Marcia
Bajinski.
I have three books that I recommend in addition to my own ebook. I generally recommend Opening Up, which is by Tristan Taormino, and it lays out a lot of different ways that people can have open relationships, including polyamory and including polymono configurations. So you can, and you can get all these online. The second one is Love and Abundance by Kathy Labriola. And I find that to be a very helpful book, especially for dealing with jealousy. She also has a jealousy workbook. But the Love and Abundance, I think, really hammers out how to handle the really common problems really, really well. And then the third one that I would recommend is More Than Two. And it just came out by Franklin Vo. And I think it really does a great job of looking at all the different issues around living relationships with more than two in them, especially in a less hierarchical fashion.
Pepper, Mint, you've organized conferences here in the Bay Area. Do you have any recommendations for resources?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that in addition to the books Marcia has listed, the biggest resources is actually polyamorous or non-monogamous people and polyamorous or non-monogamous events. Here in the Bay Area, we have meetups like at least two or three a week. There's discussion groups like there's, and I often find myself when someone like contacts me on the internet or something like that, I often find myself saying, well, the best thing you could probably do is go sit down with some experienced poly people and see what they're doing.
Mm.
And that'll give you a real sense of it. Because, you know, we are raised on monogamous training. Right? Like we get a lot of monogamous skills or sort of maybe not the greatest monogamous skills from TV, from books, all this. And there's some relearning, but by and large, people have an idea about monogamy. But when people try something that's not monogamy, you don't have that cultural background, and people often experience a sort of sense of vertigo. Like they don't, there's a lot of possibility, and they don't really know what might work for them or even how to think about it or what language to use.
A listener writes, sometimes in life, like Sophie's choice, we must choose one thing, whether it's to country, to career, or another person. But we can't be in all places simultaneously, nor is it possible to truly commit to more than one person.
Well, they're wrong.
That's a sweeping statement.
It really depends on your definition of commitment.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, another listener writes, I'd love to hear the panel talk about how they prepare themselves and work on their communication and self-actualization. As in my experience in polyamory, it's important to be operating at a pretty conscious level and to be in touch with feelings and how to communicate responsibly. Would you like to take that, William Winters?
Sure. So I grew up in South Louisiana in a little town called New Iberia. And I would not say that emotional literacy was among the top things they taught young men when I grew up. But through a lot of trial and error, I think I learned really well how to support my partner, you know, when she had like a hard time when we were first opening up our relationship. Since then, you know, I've done a lot of reading. I've taken advantage of a lot of the Bay Area's sort of personal growth and development options, counseling, trainings, Interchange Counseling Institute was a big one. I basically learned partly the hard way and partly through sort of like intentional exploration of like my own emotional landscape and like how to support other people skillfully.
Marcia Bajinski, do you have any thoughts for this person?
I mean, it's a huge question, and I think it really depends on where someone's coming from. But I think, starting with the basics of, doing your own work around, if you haven't done therapy before, that might be a thing to check out just for basic sort of emotional stability. And then as far as the polyamory piece of it, of how to navigate some of these new sensations and new feelings, one of the things I generally recommend is just take it slow. Like, you don't have to jump in the deep end of the pool right away. It's okay to start and stop. I think it's a big mistake when people approach opening up their relationship as like, it's a one-time decision. I don't think that works very well. I think for the couples that I see that have been monogamous and then open up, the thing that has worked really, really well is to sort of open a little bit and then close, like go try a thing for a night and then go back to your little safety of what you already know and talk about it and have time to integrate. And I think that time to integrate is really, really key.
Nina writes, I was in a relationship with a polyamorous woman for 2.5 years. I myself am not polyamorous. During that time, we were committed partners, and she also had a couple of other relationships that each lasted a few months to a year. It did not bother me that she was sexually or emotionally involved with other women. However, I found that when the other women brought drama into their relationship with my partner, this eventually affected her relationship with me. This is part of what eventually drove me away from the relationship. No matter how good someone's boundaries are, there's no way to completely compartmentalize relationships with separate people. It was very difficult to see my partner being hurt by another person. Although I tried to be supportive, I eventually resented that her relationships with other people were bringing negative feelings and strain into our relationship and my otherwise drama-free life. Is this something that either you're familiar with personally or that you hear a lot as in the polyamory world?
Yeah, I mean,
Polysuperstar Whitaker?
I think it's a general thing of life. I don't think that that there's that clear of a boundary. If you have a relationship with somebody, then their drama is going to be your drama. And if they're a dramatic person and they attract drama to their lives, then you're going to be affected by that. Whether they're polyamorous or not, I don't think really makes any difference. It's whether they're being dramatic or not.
Do you agree, Marsha Baczynski?
I would say, yeah, I do agree. And I also think that everyone gets to set their boundaries for what they're willing to tolerate in their relationships. And that also goes for in-laws, who can often be quite dramatic, and job stress that can often be quite dramatic and impact the relationship. Like, our relationships don't exist in a bubble. And this person's totally right. Nina's totally right that you can't compartmentalize. And I don't necessarily think that compartmentalizing is the way forward. I think it's, can people roll with the punches that life throws them? And sometimes those punches come from your other partners. And sometimes that's not okay. Just like it's not okay that your boss is making so many demands of your partner, your partner's boss is making so many demands. Like, we all have our own limits and what we're willing to tolerate. And it's okay to have those.
Another listener writes, sounds Pollyannish to me. What about getting old in the community? And how does the woman left with the child in the peppermint relationship cope day to day and in years to come? Peppermint, do you want to say a little bit about the partner in your relationship? How does she cope?
Yes. Well, I mean, the partner in my relationship has another boyfriend who's very serious. She's dated sort of a number of men, other men through our relationship. And so actually she finds herself very well supported. I think there's this sense that, like, non-monogamy must be casual somehow, and therefore really everyone's just sort of out in the field, and gosh, when push comes to shove and you're like 60, you're not going to have anyone. And that's simply not true. The people who are in fact 60, who I see in the polyamorous community, it's not even that they have someone. They typically have many someones. They have a sort of whole network of support, both of current lovers and partners, and ex-lovers and partners. And so actually, in many ways, it tends to be a very rich environment. And I think this goes back to actually the thing we were just talking about with compartmentalization. There's this ethic of, I call it cooperation, not competition. Things absolutely do affect people across the poly network, but what that means is that everyone in the network is invested in the network as a whole, in other people's relationships doing well. And you end up with this sort of romantic extended family that's actually quite powerful and supportive.
Another listener writes, could the panelists talk about the issues around ending relationships, especially with a primary partner? Has anyone here had to go through that?
Yeah, well,
Polly,
I think that the there's a big difference with polyamorous people that they view, they tend to view relationships more realistically as well. So monogamous people tend to feel that this is the one person that's going to be their only thing for the rest of their lives, and that's going to be it. And if it fails, then it's a failure. I was in a polyamorous relationship for 10 years and it's now over, but it's very amicable and loving. And when it moved on, it wasn't like, this is a failure. It was more like, this is the next stage in our relationship. And now our relationship is just non-sexual, but we're still very close.
Anyone else on the panel want to share with this person about ending relationships, the issues around ending relationships with a primary partner that they should be?
Yeah, I don't want to downplay how painful it can be. I don't want it to be like, oh, well, it's just that it's different. But I agree with what Polly said. I think that the monogamous context that we all grew up with, or at least that I grew up with, is, you know, your relationship is successful if one of you dies at the end of it, which I find to be not really a very satisfying view of success personally. So the transition of relationships, you know, I think it's different when you're in your 20s than when you're in your 40s or in your 60s about a relationship ending and what the meaning we attach to that can be. But yeah, I agree with Polly. Like, my first polyamorous relationship is my best friend, and we haven't been romantic or sexual in a decade, but we moved to California together. So, you know, there's definitely this sense of relationships can take a lot of different forms and all of them are legitimate that I think is much more common in polyamory. And I think polyamory values intimate friendship in a different way that also creates space for these kinds of traditions or transitions, rather.
You know, our listeners are also asking again in terms of practical considerations how you handle holidays like Thanksgiving. Anyone want to say their strategy for that?
Well,
it's complicated.
I mean, not really. I mean, I tend to organize a really, really big sort of orphan Thanksgiving event that sometimes like 70 to 100 people attend. And there is a lot of sort of like cross network collaboration and like making the event happen and coordinating food. And, you know, it's just a big community thing. And there are lots of poly folks. And in fact, Anna's partners brought their parents who live in the Bay Area to this big event a few years ago. My parents flew from Louisiana along with my siblings and came to our big Thanksgiving event as well. So yeah, that's certainly one way of doing it. I don't suggest that everyone, you know, throw enormous holiday parties.
But as this is the day before Valentine's, curious how folks handle Valentine's Day, which is the holiday about amorousness.
Well, again, it's I'm throwing an event with everyone coming to the party so that we can all be together and nobody has to select one person to go out for dinner with. But instead, we're all together. I've actually bought the most enormous Valentine's Day card, and I was at Walgreens and they were like, wow, that's a really big card. And I was like, yeah, it's for a lot of people.
I Marcia don't Bajitsky. Particularly like Valentine's Day, so I'm pretty content to not have, like, if my other sweeties want to go do stuff with other people, that's fine. I don't care. I'm perfectly content to treat it just like any other day. And as a relationship coach, like, to be honest, I usually work. I usually do events for other people. And so for me, it's not really a very significant holiday. But, you know, I like getting cards. That's nice. I like getting stuff in the mail. So if I get a card in the mail, that's all I really need.
Yeah, I heard a great story.
Probably Superstar Whitaker.
Of a friend of mine who is in a triad relationship, and her boyfriend has a wife, and it's all very loving between them. And it was really sweet to hear yesterday that that her boyfriend's wife has given him the go-ahead to spend Valentine's Day with her because she loves him so much. And she knows that he would have a wonderful time hanging out with her. So I just thought that was like the most romantic thing you could imagine, to say, yes, please go and have a loving evening with your girlfriend for Valentine's Day.
I think we have time for one more call. Victor in Berkeley. Hi, Victor.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
So I am in a monogamous relationship, and I have a large circle of friends who are polyamorous. And they are at various places on the spectrum and various experience levels. And I'm wondering, I end up sometimes not coaching, but kind of being a sounding board for a lot of these folks in my circle who are less experienced. And how does the panel, deal with, or how did you guys deal with transitioning away from traditional monogamy and the complexities inherent within?
And I will have to be quick. Is there anybody who really wants to take this? Who's burning to answer Victor's question?
Yeah.
William
so,
Winters.
Yeah. So just real quick. I mean, I think that finding community is absolutely the most important thing. And being in the Bay Area, there's so much available. There's an event that I recently stopped organizing, but that still happens 4 times a month called the Open Relationship Community Potluck. It happens first Tuesday, third Thursday of every month in Oakland and San Francisco. It happens, in the South Bay and on the peninsula. And it's just like you can find so many people who are doing the same thing.
Well, William Winters, Marsha Baczynski, Polly Superstar Whitaker, and Pepper Mint on my panel of polyamorists. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to our listeners for their questions. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Mina Kim. Thanks for listening, and have a happy Valentine's Day tomorrow.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.